syndicated source material.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with another episode of Syndicated Source Material. We're getting ready to go into the 18th episode that aired on the Rattlitch Inn Broadcasting Network. This episode aired on the 12th of January, 2015, and the only reason I know that date exactly, this was live, by the way, on the network. You could probably tell by the audio when you listen to it. But the only reason I know that date is because what I've deleted from this podcast through the editing process is me giving you the score of the Ohio State-Oregon championship game. So that helped me narrow down exactly when this was recorded. I went live on Blog Talk for this episode, and I was completely solo. The topic of the podcast is an image event that came out in 1994, and you'll hear me talk about how it was one of my favorite image events that I had read because I gravitated towards the character of Supreme, and this is Supreme Madness. The core of this event occurred between issues 13 and 18 of the Supreme title. I didn't do a great job giving credit where credit is due for the creators in the episode, so I'll go ahead and do that here for the six issues that I read. So issue 13, the title of it apparently was called The Toss of a Coin, and that's the only title, really, that at least Mike's Amazing World of Comics associated with any of the issues in this event. But the plotter of the event is Rob Liefeld. Throughout all six issues, the writer, letterer, and sometimes editor was Kurt Hathaway. Colors were done by Christian Lichtner, and Linda Medley popped in there for issue 14. So issue 13 had pencils by Cedric Nocon, inks by Norm Ratmond. Issue 14 had art by Dan Fraga. Issue 15 had art by Petty, P-E-D-I, and I talk a little bit about his art in the podcast. Issue 16 had art by Norm Ratmond. Then issues 17 and 18 both had pencils done by Cedric Nocon and inks done by Norm Ratmond. The layouts kind of varied as well. It looks like issue 18, the layouts were done by Marat Michaels. It's the only time he shows up among the six issues that I saw on the credits page. So there you go. That is the credits for all six issues of Supreme Madness. The first half hour of this podcast, by the way, is just me kind of giving you a lead up to the story. There's a few issues that I try to quickly cover. So about the first half hour is just me getting you prepped for what's about to happen. By the way, the original runtime of this podcast was an hour and 53 minutes. And as of right now, it looks like we've got it down to an hour and 10. So took out a big chunk of space and shortened it a good bit. Ronnie was listening live and I was communicating through the podcast to him at some point. So took a lot of that out of there. Just kind of stuck with the main guts of what I was talking about. This may be the first time I told of my hatred for what Alan Moore did to the Supreme character. So there's that little bit of trivia in this episode. If it's not the first time, it's definitely one of the earliest. There's a mention of Big Daddy from Bioshock when I was trying to describe the mech robot that Grizzlock had. At the time, I hadn't played the Bioshock series, and I felt it necessary to kind of pop in here and say, or bring that up and say that I did finally play Bioshock, at least the first one. I haven't played any of the sequels, but I played Bioshock about a year or so ago. Loved it. Great game. The other thing I want to say, finally, before we get into the episode, is that I mentioned Extreme Sacrifice. That was another image event that I wanted to cover. It covers the death of Supreme. Extreme Sacrifice does have to happen. At some point, I do have to get that recorded on here. So let's get on with the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Supreme Madness.
Hey, welcome to Source Material, my friends. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight, my friends, we are going to take a trip back to the 90s, the mid-90s, as a matter of fact, and we're going to cover a story arc that is kind of near and dear to my heart, at least the character is. I'm talking about a character by the name of Supreme. Supreme was one of those few Image titles that I felt I needed to have. When Image broke back in the early 90s, Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, make sure I'm pronouncing all these right, the Jim Lee, you know, when they broke from Marvel and became their own company, it was one of the coolest things I think I ever had a chance to witness and understand as a teenager. You know, I wasn't huge into comics. Like, granted, I'd collected a few when I was really young, but wasn't really, you know, like hard at collecting. Or, oh, man, I got to get this issue next and this issue next. I think I mentioned on some of the previous shows, I've collected some of the X titles, grabbed some of those when I was a kid. But when I recognized, the first thing that grabbed me was Todd McFarlane's art on Spider-Man. And then when I started grabbing some of the, I'm sure some of you guys know of the comic book magazine called Wizard. I started grabbing that off the shelf kind of regularly. Of course, one of the biggest pieces of news from back then was when these artists split from Marvel. They basically wanted to take have some creative freedom where Marvel couldn't give that. For example, I just watched a great PBS, I'm pretty sure it's PBS, PBS documentary. It's called Superheroes, A Never-Ending Battle, I believe is what it is. If you got Netflix, go and check it out. Oh, man, really, it was only 3 episodes, but each episode's probably near an hour long. So if you ever have the chance, go and grab it. But they talked about, on the 3rd episode, they kind of caught up with some of the times, and they talked about the split these artists had with Marvel, and Todd McFarlane was one of the guys that was kind of leading the way. Basically, they had went to Marvel management, and I may have some of my facts totally incorrect here, but basically they went to Marvel management and said, hey, this is what we want. We want to, you know, I'm sure what they probably wanted, the equivalent of a raise, you know, merchandising, whatever, just a little bit more, because they felt that their art was selling some of the books, and I, for one, am not going to disagree with them, because that was some of the stuff that really caught my eye. When you look at some of the early Spider-Man art that McFarlane did, it's clear and obvious that it draws you in. Some great stuff. So when Marvel said no, you know, hey, you're not selling the books, it's Spider-Man that's selling the books. I think I'm quoting that from the episode I just watched yesterday. McFarlane's like, all right, well, screw that. You know, I've got 3 or 4 talented guys, maybe even more than that, that are willing to walk away from this company. We're going to go start our own. Now, folks, I'm sure you probably heard me use the words the big two, and it's still to this day the big two, Marvel and DC. But when you got one guy saying, nope, we're going to go start our own company, I'm sure if you're either in a Marvel office or even if this was brought to the DC office, your first inclination is just to laugh. Like, yeah, you guys are going to go up against us. And damn it, if they did not do it. Image Books, when they first started coming out, there were just insane amounts of copies being sold of this independent publisher. And I can remember looking at the Wizard mags and looking in the back. They would have this little graph in the back that would show like the percentage of the market share that DC and Marvel or Image had. And you would start to see Image really taking over. So I think one of my first ever Image issues was Pit. I could be incorrect there, but I think I grabbed Pit number 2. Dale Keown basically brought the character Pit to Image. Let me give you an idea what Image was here real quick, and then we'll get into the story we're talking about tonight. Image was basically, you know, Todd McFarlane comes over and he says, okay, guys, here's a company where we're just a company by name. You create a property, you own that property. That's your property. So Todd McFarlane creates Spawn. That's his property. Under the guise of Image, these characters can cross over and interweave with each other. But what you ended up seeing is, like, Rob Liefeld creates his own, like, little sub-company, Awesome Comics or Maximum Press, what have you. I think it went through a lot of different changes under the Image brand. Todd McFarlane had his, well, I don't even know what his was called off the top of my head. I know Jim Lee had Wildstorm, which housed the Wildcats. Stormwatch, I think, was under the Wildstorm property. Pitt had, I think, Dale Keown had his own company. I just read it a few minutes ago, can't remember. But pretty much what Image did was put these, you know, put the creative control into the people who had brought these characters to life. It wasn't owned by Image. This was owned by the person that created it, and they got all the money, you know, that came from it. Todd McFarlane's one of the, we'll just say one of the most wealthy, because Spawn sold like hotcakes when it was first out. He mentioned that there were copy runs of like in 900,000. I mean, that's literally right now, you are not going to find that anywhere on the market today of a single issue selling 900,000 copies. So the boom at that point in time for the comic book industry was really starting to escalate. People were really becoming interested in reading comics and buying it. The problem a lot of people will say is the fact that you get all these talented artists who bring their properties over, create these properties. You know, like I said, Liefeld. Liefeld was the creator. Rob Liefeld was the creator. He was the creator of Supreme. Okay, and you know, he comes over and brings Supreme out, I become a fan. What you start to see is people start gravitating towards buying more comics. And people, I mean, just like I said, 900,000 issues sold of Spawn. Now, this is obviously prior to the big collapse of the comic book market. And I don't know a whole lot about that. I understand what happened. Death of Superman or the Return of Superman was probably, it could even be more equated to that. But that's a topic for another day. I love talking Image Comics. I actually scoured, I remember going up to Columbus and scouring the bookshops trying to find, there's a book out there, it's called Image, The Road to Independence. And I've made it through, I don't know, about 3/4 of the book. I really need to pick it back up and finish it. But it is a great, if you guys ever have the chance and you want to read about how Image Comics got started, they try to interview everybody, all the founding members of Image, McFarlane, Jim Lee. I don't think they get a hold of Rob. And of course, I know Rob's got his up and downs and he's pissed off at somebody here, you know. So I think that they weren't able to get a hold of Rob. Eric Larson, Savage Dragon, I can't forget him because that's another one of the ones that I collected for quite a while. But Supreme, let's focus on Supreme tonight. It's what I'm bringing to you tonight, a story arc that ran through Supreme, issue 13 through 18 of Supreme. So we're talking a little bit more. Now, if they put out monthly, which that was a tall order. See, that was one of the drawbacks with early Image. I can remember Will Portocio and his Wetworks being one of the most delayed books I think I've ever seen in my entire life. I remember Wizard saying, okay, the plan is to get these guys out, you know, Wetworks out this day. So if it was a scheduled monthly basis, we're only a little bit more than a year into Supreme here with issue number 13. It's doubtful that's the case. I know that it was, you know, I could pull it up here real quick. I think it was 94 when this story arc started. But the story arc is called Supreme Madness. Yes, first printing June 1994. And this is volume 2 of Supreme, volume 2, number 13. That starts Supreme Madness. And it's a 6-issue story arc. I'm going to do my best here to give you an idea of who Supreme is. And I kind of gave a little bit of a description there in the Blog Talk Radio blurb that I put out there. Supreme is, I mean, we'll just go out and say it. Supreme is your Superman of the Image universe. Dresses in white except for some red and a red cape. Very, very powerful there. When I first read something dealing with Supreme, I think I was reading like a Bloodstrike issue. And Bloodstrike was like this mercenary force, I believe, or government-funded force. Supreme just basically flies into this airport that's being that there's some hostages in. And he shows up, and Bloodstrike's trying to be all, I wouldn't say diplomatic, but they're trying to be, you know, take care of things without, you know, any of the hostages being harmed. Supreme just flies in, grabs one of the terrorists, and melts his face off with his eye beams. So, you know, what I put in the Blog Talk blurb is that, you know, he's the powers of Superman, the attitude of the Punisher, the ego, I would say a little bit of the ego of Dr. Doom, very egomaniacal. And we'll get into that in this story. I mean, he believes he's the best, and he doesn't hesitate to let anybody know that. And damn the consequences. When he went in and took care of this, you know, this hostage situation, there were some hostages that died because of his just blatant running in there and taking care of everything. It's not like he was able to, you know, disarm everybody and then turn everybody over to the police. No, he killed all the terrorists, okay? That was his goal, was to just eliminate the threat and then fly off. You know, there, problem solved. He's got the power. He's got the tools. They've got the power. So he took care of business. So in this, you know, that was what really, I was like, holy crap. that guy is awesome. So that led me into trying to get some of the issues, and I was able to collect, you know, just about, I think I started collecting in like issue 5 or something crazy like that. And then I went back and was able to get some of the early issues. Probably paid out the nose for them back in the 90s, but I was able to get it, and I got a pretty close to full run of Supreme. So Alan Moore, we've talked about Alan Moore on this program before with the Killing Joke. You know, he's a genius. A lot of people will look at him. I've read some of his stories, and, you know, I used to hate Alan Moore. And the reason I hated Alan Moore was because of Supreme. I didn't know who Alan Moore was from freaking, you know, some other dude that can't write for a crap. But until later, I was able to read some of the stories that he wrote, and I definitely have an appreciation for what Alan Moore could do. Alan Moore went, in the later issues of Supreme, Supreme was floundering, basically. It just felt like he didn't have much of a direction. So according to what I read, and this is on the internet, so we know it's true, but according to what I read, Liefeld goes to Alan Moore in the later issues of, you know, in the later issues of Supreme, and says, listen, write Supreme for me. And I think this is like in the 50s, in the issue number 50s, okay? And Alan Moore says, okay, I'll do it on one condition. We're throwing everything out. Everything that you've done for the last 40, whatever, 50-some issues, done out the window. What Alan Moore proceeds to do is he takes Supreme and, you know, as if Supreme wasn't enough of a, I don't want to call him a knockoff of Superman, but, I mean, when you first read Supreme, before Alan Moore got his hands on him, that's, you know, that's who you thought of. This is definitely the Image Comics Superman. He proceeds to take Supreme and just not only, I mean, just... Again, harkens, I guess what I read is it harkens back to the golden age of Superman. You had Superman had his kryptonite, Supreme had Supremium. Superman had Krypto, Supreme had Radar. We got, there was Lady Supreme, Kid Supreme. Oh my gosh, when I first got a hold of one of those issues, honest to goodness, I swear I've got it around here somewhere, and I know that I've mentioned it. I believe it was on Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, and I may have mentioned it on here before, but I wrote a letter to Image Comics. Now, it takes a lot for me to get so upset about something. I'm usually a pretty laid back guy. You're not going to see me bitch about anything online, let alone take pen to damn paper, but it's rare that I'm going to get so upset that I actually am going to write a company, express my displeasure at what they did. I wrote Awesome Comics, I think is what it was at that point in time, and I told them how much I hated what this person had done. I don't even know if I could tell you right now, writing that letter, I don't even think I mentioned Alan Moore's name. I just remember sitting there going, how could they do this? How could they take one of my most beloved properties, this egomaniacal, I mean, what a great twist on the Superman character. They could go route after whole different ways with this. But because they didn't have the faith in the writing, which again, I think I'd mentioned this earlier, we had all these artists come over, the writing was a little suspect. But how could they do this to one of my most beloved characters? Why? And at that time, I didn't realize that I saw it there in the pages, but I didn't realize that they were actually seriously getting rid of everything that they just wrote. All these issues that they put in, all this time, all this love that I built for this character, done away in Alan Moore's writing. And so, again, I was so upset about it. You know, I'd wrote the company. Now, reading what I saw online, this is funny, because Alan Moore said that, yeah, let me have it. I'm going to take it over. All the other stuff is not going to matter. Everything up to that point is not going to matter. I'm redoing the whole thing. Apparently, it was because he felt apologetic or felt somewhat responsible for ushering in the era of the dark hero. Now, after I read that, I pondered upon it a few times, went upstairs, and then I got to thinking about how kind of poetic that is, because Supreme is definitely, absolutely 100% a dark hero. Alan Moore comes in there and gets rid of one of the darkest heroes on Image's roster. I get to thinking, well, yeah, he clearly tried to make it better. In my eyes, it was crap. And I'll give the story another shot here, because I read his story arc that he did. Maybe one day we'll cover it on here. But, man, I mean, you want to... Let's not just rip off Superman. Let's just rip him completely off. Let's go back... You know, rip off all the Golden Age stuff. And it just sickened me, is what it did. But tonight, we're talking more happier times. Prior to Alan Moore going and ruining my dreams, we are talking Supreme Madness. Supreme Madness. What we're going to do here is like I said, it went from issue 13 to issue 18, but I'm going to take you back to issue 7. Now, I'm not going to give you the details, you know, all the way. These previous issues, I'm just going to give you a quick little breakdown of the issues leading up to Supreme Madness, because I believe they're key. I'll give you some of the, you know, try to do my best to give you the some idea of who the players are in this storyline. I understand a lot of you may not be, that have listened to this or are listening to this, you know, may not be too familiar with Image Comics. But, you know, I'm going to do my best to give you an idea and give you some similarities between Marvel or DC characters. But we're going to start back with issue 7. And issue 7, there's only a few key events that happen in this issue that I want to bring up. There's a German facility, all right, that's somehow linked to Supreme. There's a guy that's, like, kind of got connections with Supreme and trying to, I wouldn't say control Supreme, but try to bring Supreme into leading a government group. But they have this German facility. On a nice clear night, out of the blue, drops the one, the only, Thor. Now, when I say Thor, my assumption is Thor cannot be copyrighted, because this is definitely Image's version of Thor, with the big shoulder pads, long red hair, looking more like a Viking than he is, you know, the blonde hair that we're used to from the Marvel Universe. But he does show up, and he has his trusty hammer, which, okay, if you're used to Thor's hammer in the Marvel Universe, this thing looks like a sledgehammer. But it is Mjolnir. He has Mjolnir, and he shows up at this German facility, and he starts taking out these guards. What we find out is that Thor's actually been trapped on Earth for 50 years. And when I say trapped, he's been trapped, like, in a mountain. He's not been able to get out. And so he finally gets out of the mountain, and the first thing he does is he's like, I'm going after Hitler. Hitler put me here. I'm getting my revenge. So he shows up, and he's, like, screaming, trying to take me to Hitler, you know, and he's beating the shit out of these guards, electrifying him with the power of Mjolnir. He's, you know, these guards are like, what the hell's going on? Well, Supreme hears about it, that Thor's return. I don't know if he heard it on the news. Yeah, he basically hears it on the news. So he heads over, flies over to Germany. Thor and Supreme have had history. Supreme, by the way, you know, I kind of described his costume. Supreme's a gray-haired, older, you know, kind of an older gentleman. If you looked at him, you would say he's easily in his 50s. So he heads over to Germany because he finds out that Thor's back. So he heads over that way to try and figure out, and of course he finds out that Thor's attacking this facility. And we kind of get a little bit of a backstory on Thor. Thor, during the World War II, Thor actually teamed with the Nazis. Hitler somehow duped Thor into aiding him. And of course, Supreme was actually alive back then, was fighting on the side of the Allies. And of course we have Thor and Supreme were at odds back then. We find out that the many times that they've battled, it was always a stalemate. Well, Hitler was the one that actually imprisoned Thor after Thor figured out, you know, what was going on and why, you know, that he was fighting on the wrong side. He was fighting on the side of evil. So he comes out with, you know, a mission to kill Hitler. But he thinks it's still back in the 40s. So Supreme shows up. Last page of issue 7 is Thor sitting there with his hammer and Supreme ready to, you know, with his fist clenched and ready to fight. So that's the end of issue 7. The obvious big thing is that Thor, we have an Image Universe Thor here. So issue 8, we get our battle between Thor and Supreme. While this battle was going on, Thor's nailing Supreme with the electrified energy of Mjolnir. And by the way, Mjolnir has two L's in the Image verse, which, if we all know, when you're doing comics, if you add an extra letter, it's just that much more badass. Now, during this fight, there is some cuts to a guy by the name of Zachariah Grislock, who is one of Supreme's oldest enemies. Now, Zachariah is very much your Lex Luthor. He's more along the lines of, like, got a lab background and, you know, messing with potions and serums and all that stuff. But we find out that Zachariah has escaped prison, or either escaped or maybe let go. I don't know. But he's now back in his lab, and he finds that Supreme is, you know, out there, and he wants revenge on Supreme. So we've kind of got that little backstory going here. Remember, Zachariah Grislock. Supreme, as this battle goes on between Supreme and Thor, Supreme gets the upper hand by pretty much taking a tree, throwing it at Thor, hitting Thor in the chest. He wins Thor, knocks the wind out of him before Thor can get his hands back on Mjolnir. As they banter back and forth, Thor becomes starts believing that Supreme has now aligned himself and taken the place of Thor by Hitler's side. So he believes that Supreme has abandoned the Allies and is now in league with Hitler. And that's pretty much at the end of issue 8. The battle continues pretty much. Thor's still confused and unrelenting on Supreme, and they just battle back and forth. And we get into issue 9, and I thought this was kind of interesting. They do a good job, of course, just like any comic. Give you an idea of who wrote the story. Issue 9 was written by none other than, one word, Ripley. So apparently between fighting aliens, Ripley was able to whip off a few storylines for Extreme Studios. But, okay, Thor and Supreme still battling back and forth in the Germany countryside. Thor hits Supreme with a pretty powerful blast from Mjolnir and kind of lays him out there. Playing possum, though, Supreme reaches up and grabs Thor's hammer, or Thor by the throat, and with one final punch, just right in the face, knocks Thor out. And that's the end of the fight. Now, we got a pretty good fight, though. I mean, we're talking about, like, I mean, shoot, 4 or 5 pages with a couple double-page spreads. But he knocks Thor out, takes Thor, and proceeds to pretty much fly him over to this facility and lays Thor out on this table and tells one of the head guys there, here, you know, here's Thor, by the way. And, oh, yeah, I'm taking Mjolnir. Mjolnir's mine now. Obviously, our big difference between Thor's hammer here in the Image universe and Thor's hammer in the Marvel universe is the he who be worthy, you know, type, or I guess the stipulation, I guess you would say, because Supreme has no issue picking this thing up and just wielding it like it's his. And trust me, if that whole he who be worthy thing was here in place in this universe, there's no way Supreme would have been able to pick it up. But, you know, Supreme just lays Thor out on this desk and says, here you go. Oh, yeah, I'm taking the hammer. That's the end of the Thor and Supreme fight now. So remember that. Supreme now has Thor's hammer. That is going to be important as we go through these next few issues. We have another cut back to Grizzlock. Grizzlock's in his lab. And what we find out is he's created this a radioactive element. It looks like a big rock. What he's saying is that the powers of this rock are just identical to Supreme's, very noticeably his invulnerability. And what he plans on doing, which I have no idea how he's going to do this, is he's going to take this rock and he's going to implement it into this machine, this mech. He's going to use it to beat Supreme with. There's your cut for Grizzlock in this issue. Now, the end of this issue pretty much sets up issue 10, which is, all issue 10 is pretty much an origin issue. Supreme goes and finds this news lady who's been begging him for an interview, actually pretty much harassing him for an interview, and he just shows up and he's like, all right, we have to talk. Now, his ego, his attitude is quite clear throughout, you know, these issues. He doesn't believe he can be beaten. I mean, that is clear. He thinks he is Supreme. And as a matter of fact, in this origin issue, I think he surmises and tells us why he picked the name Supreme. I'll give you a little bit of background of Supreme's origin here. It's very similar to, it's almost like, it's similar to Captain America's, where he volunteers to become a lab rat, basically. But instead, he's like bombarded with radiation. So where we got a little bit of a Hulk, you know, a little bit of Hulk in there. But he pretty much was turned into a Superman. Not only did his speed, his strength, and all that start to get enhanced, but so did his intellect. He started to become very smart. Until he finally just told the scientists, you know, there's no reason for me to be here anymore. I'm so smart. I'm smarter than the freaking scientists that are doing this to me. And so he proceeds to leave. Of course, this was back in the 40s when the war was going on. And at one point during the interview, he actually calls himself a god. You know, he felt he was supreme compared to everybody else. We find out, you know, Supreme helped the Allies win the war. But once that was done, he didn't feel that there was anything else left for him to do here on Earth. He thought, well, I just helped these guys beat the Axis. So he says, after fighting this war, he realizes that the human race is going to kill itself off. He has bigger and better things to do, and he feels like he needs to go find himself amongst the cosmos. So he just, like, screw Earth and picks up and leaves. He's gone for 50 years. 50 years out in space, doing his own deal, you know, doing his own thing, helping out other races. But Earth is obviously something in the past to him. So he comes back close to 50 years later, and now it's the 90s. There's pretty much your origin for Supreme. In the process of this interview, the news cuts again, and this newsroom is now abuzz about some goings on over in Arizona. There's a guy loose in Arizona by the name of Quantum. So, you know, apparently Quantum is this huge threat. So Supreme's like, well, let me show you how to handle things. Off through the roof of the news. I mean, the dude has no care in the world and takes off up through the roof of the newsroom and heads over to Arizona to go take care of Quantum. Of course, trusty Hammer in tow. So our next issue is actually a crossover issue for an event called Extreme Prejudice, which occurred throughout the Extreme titles, Bloodstrike, Brigade, maybe Prophet. I don't know if Prophet was going on at this point in time. Supreme, obviously. But this was part four. The next issue of Supreme is actually part four of this crossover. So Supreme is heading to go take on a being by the name of Quantum. I want to make issue 11 of Supreme here. I'm just going to make a quick mention here. There is the artist that does this issue, very, very unique art. And also a very unique name. The artist is a guy by the name of Pedi, P-E-D-I. And, of course, first thing I think of is some girl going to get their nails done, or their feet, I guess. A mani is your hands, and the feet is Pedi. So, P-E-D-I, but this art, okay, the art in this book, like I said, I've not seen anything like it. Now, I don't know if this guy is still around, but he has some very unique layouts. Facial expressions of some of the people. I'm going to have to do some research just to see if he's still around. But anyway, Petty's on the art, and he is definitely on fire in this issue. All right, so Supreme heads to battle Quantum, flies over to Arizona. Quantum is like you're the only person I can really kind of, you know, put him in league with is Magneto. He has like these electromagnetic radiation powers. You know, when Supreme shows up, he's got these two guys up against a wall, and he's using these, like, and they look like restraints, but they're his powers, green, like, cloudy-looking restraints. So I don't know if he's got, like, he can manifest this radiation to keep somebody in place or what exactly, but feels like a Magneto type of dude. Definitely an older guy, you know, goatee, long gray hair, almost, you know, on the league of the age of Supreme here, but Quantum's pretty powerful, and we find out that he's already beaten Bloodstrike and Brigade, which are two of the super teams of Image and Extreme Studios. He's already beaten them and taken the two heads prisoners. Now, I believe these two leaders of these teams are actually brothers, and they're Quantum's sons. There's a little bit of backstory on Extreme Prejudice. Supreme shows up, and of course, immediately he's taken on Quantum, just like he always does. Rushes in, blasts through a roof or something, and just immediately attacks the aggressor. Well, supposedly Quantum is getting stronger as days go by. And now, as this is going on, Zachariah Grislock is sitting in his lab, and he's watching as this battle was going on, and he's getting upset because Quantum is actually battling Supreme, and he wants to get his revenge on Supreme, and he doesn't want anybody else to beat him to it. So he's kind of sitting there with bated breath, you know, kind of rooting for Supreme, I'm guessing, that he's going to come out because he wants his revenge. Supreme and Quantum have this awesome battle, you know, blood flying everywhere, people getting punched in the face, flying through buildings, all that good excessive 90s stuff, till finally the battle ends up in space. And as they're fighting up there, Quantum takes both his hands and just nails with all his might Supreme right in the chest with his powers. And just sends, the only thing you see is Supreme's cape. the tail end of his cape as Supreme is just hurtled down to the earth. Supreme lands on the earth, lands in Africa, I think. And Quantum's up in space, and Quantum just leaves. Supreme is kind of dazed, and he gets back up, kind of hits his head, you know, on his way down, and he's rubbing the back of his head, gets back up, points his arms to the heavens, and he can't fly. He's lost his powers. And he's absolutely shocked that he cannot go anywhere. Supreme has definitely been bested, and now he lies there powerless. And that's the end of issue 11. So our buddy Supreme has now been knocked down a notch. So let's get into issue 12. Issue 12 only thing that really happens here, Supreme still has Mjolnir, and he decides, well, in his weakened state, it's best not to go after Quantum. So instead, he finds out that Grizzlock, who has escaped, he would be better fodder. So with the power of Mjolnir, he takes off. There's a real funny part where he just kind of jumps off a cliff, and he doesn't really know how to use the power of Mjolnir exactly yet. He jumps off this cliff and just falls down to the bottom of this cliff because he's not used to not being able to fly, and he's pissed. And so he decides, okay, I'm not going after Quantum, I'm going after Grizzlock. Now, Grizzlock has this mechanation, this mech suit, and, okay, I'm gonna have to give a little bit of criticism here. We do get a little origin about Grizzlock, by the way, who he ran a lab, and then Supreme ended up busting in when there was this hostage situation. Supreme took care of the hostages and flew those guys out of there. But if he would have stuck around a couple more seconds, Supreme would have been able to disarm the bomb, but Supreme didn't care. So he just left with the hostages, saved the hostages, and left. So Grizzlock's lab got blown to pieces when Supreme could have stopped everything. So Grizzlock harbors this, ill will towards Supreme, and of course wants his revenge. But Grizzlock has this machination that he calls the Supreme Slayer, and he's going to hop into the Supreme Slayer powered by this radioactive rock, and he's going to get his revenge with Supreme. Grizzlock puts the plan in motion by causing car fires on the White House lawn. Now this suit looks very much like Big Daddy, except no drill. Instead, we got guns and stuff on the arm, so it's this huge mech suit. So he's out there, and he's yelling for Supreme. And of course, Supreme's on his way to face him anyway. And at the end of this issue, the battle begins. All right. So there I've done my best to recap the first six issues prior to Supreme Madness. So Supreme Madness is about to begin. I'll do my best to keep this short for you guys. I know I've been going on and on and on. Right now, we're going to start off a battle between Grizzlock's mechanation, the Supreme Slayer, and Supreme. Grizzlock's machine starts to get the better of Supreme, pretty quickly. And a lot of that is because Supreme has lost his powers. He is not as powerful as he was used to. But what we find out is that he mentions the aura, or the Mjolnir, is actually protecting Supreme from a lot of the blows that this thing is hitting him with. I mean, there's points where, Supreme is trying to get the best of him and continually, hitting the mech with this hammer. There's four panels where he actually tries to beat the crap out of the mech with this hammer, and it's no luck. There's nothing going on. I mean, he's hitting it with electricity. Supreme's trying to do everything he can to beat Grizzlock until he finally figures out. He goes around to the back of this machine, and before Grizzlock can turn around, he nails this back panel with all of Mjolnir's might and busts open something. Busts open the cooling engines, or the coolant tanks for the suit. Now that proceeds to get everything a dang hot temperature for Grizzlock inside the suit, who has to get out. So he opens up the suit. Supreme is right there, and he tells him, he says, "Let that mechanical monstrosity be your tomb, Grizzlock. May you forever rot in hell." And Grizzlock's up there like, no, don't kill me. Takes the hammer and with one swing hits the machine, the mech, and it just falls apart. And on the ground lays this radioactive material. Supreme promptly just takes his hammer, Mjolnir, and just zaps it. And everything, this whole revenge plot that Grizzlock has been putting into effect for the last 14 years he spent in prison, is now just laid to waste. Remember the point where the part where I told you where Supreme rushed in and melted the faces off of those terrorists? Let's just say Grizzlock's not going to be much different. He goes over to Grizzlock, grabs his head, and he is going to kill Grizzlock right there. Grizzlock's begging for his life, but then he starts to tell Supreme that he's actually saw what's happened now. He sees that the Supreme has actually lost a bit of his powers, and that he is relying on this hammer. He's relying on Mjolnir to help him. And he begs and pleads with Supreme. He says, "Listen, don't kill me yet, because our final showdown is going to be a hollow one. I can get your powers back." If this was Superman, what do you think would happen? Superman would take this guy to jail. But because we're talking Supreme here and his egomania, Supreme accepts and says, "Okay, if you can get my powers back, you lead the way. If you mess around, I'm obviously going to kill you. But if there's a way for us to get my powers back, show me how to do it." Grizzlock's, "Okay, look, I'll do this for you, but as soon as you get your powers back, we both go our separate ways." So Supreme accepts and follows Grizzlock to his laboratory. Grizzlock hooks him up to all these wires and stuff and sets him down in this big chair. We see that Grizzlock's hooked up some type of apparatus to draw power off Mjolnir. Tells Supreme, okay, here we go. I'm going to flip the switch. You're going to get your powers back. But remember, we go our separate ways after this, and then we'll meet on the battlefield at some other time. Supreme's like, go ahead and do it. Get it done. So Grizzlock flips the switch, and surge of power just lights up Supreme. He's laying there and smoke and fire just kind of roll off of him. And Grizzlock starts laughing. Grizzlock had this plan to get him in there and kill him. So Grizzlock thinks he's won. Problem is, Supreme is emerging from the rubble. And it's funny because Grizzlock is so overtaken with laughter by the fact that he actually beat Supreme by luring him in there. Doesn't realize that Supreme is still alive. The final panel here is two-page spread of Supreme, who is... I used this week as my profile pic on Facebook. A very, very... haggard looking Supreme, who's just not irate is not even the word to use here. He's screaming, Grizzlock, what have you done to me? And that's where we end the first part of our story. And of course, Grizzlock's looking at him and he says, uh-oh. Something's wrong. He looks like crap. Obviously, Grizzlock just tried to kill him, but he is incensed and enraged. End of issue 13, part 1. Now, we're going to go to the 14th issue here, part 2. I'm thinking, okay, we're going to get a battle of some sorts between Supreme and Grizzlock. Grizzlock's going to try and escape, get out. No, we're going to start with a guy by the name of Union. Now, one of the things that, I'm happy to bring this forward and do this particular story arc is we're going to get introduced to a few of the Image mainstays. Union is one of them. Remember, many of you if you collected Image comics back in the day, probably remember the cover of Union number one, which was, Mark Texiera. Beautiful cover. But I'm going to try and give you my best idea of who Union is. I'm pretty certain that he's from outer space. I'm on the Comic Vine wiki right now, just kind of getting an idea of what it is. I'll give you an idea of his powers. He has this thing called the Justice Stone. He has self-propelled flight. One of the things you'll notice, any pictures of Union, he has these energy staffs, plasma staffs, I guess is what they're calling them here. He can control the staff from a distance, having it return to him at near light speeds. He uses that pretty much as a weapon. He's got energy blasts that he can do, self-propelled flight, creation of force fields. The Justice Stone increases the water's strength, speed, endurance, and durability to superhuman levels. Okay, there you go. That's your idea of Union. Union's a pretty cool-looking character. He's an older-looking dude, white hair. I don't know what it is with the white hair and these superheroes in the Image universe. Pretty powerful guy. Now, we open up with Union, and he's with some chick that I'm sure... Oh, yeah, by the way, Union's actual name is Omen, okay? Now, we're not going to call him... We don't want to call him Omen as in O-M-E-N. No, we're going to add an H. So it's O-Men. O-H-M-E-N. But that is his real name. Anyway, he's at an art gallery, and he's checking out the art. All of a sudden, there's this huge explosion off in the distance. Well, we find out that explosion is Zachariah Grizzlock's lab. Just go ahead and cut it short right here, folks, for Zachariah, because he's not going to show up anymore. He's dead. At least in this story arc, we're not going to see him anymore. Apparently, something happened at the lab. We don't get into the whole fight between Supreme and Grizzlock. The whole facility is destroyed, along with several blocks of where this facility is at. That gets Union's attention, and Union flies over, and as he's flying over, he sees this devastation, and he sees a figure flying up into the air, and it's Supreme. Something is wrong with Supreme. Immediately, you see that he is calling Union Grizzlock. He believes that Grizzlock is up there flying and trying to get to him, and not only just get to him, he's trying to get to the hammer. There's this crazed look on Supreme's face, and he says, "You will not touch the hammer of Supreme. My hammer protects me, needs me." And of course, Union's like, what the hell is going on? This guy's calling me by a different name. I don't know what's going on here. He recognizes Supreme. It's not like Union has no idea who Supreme is. Supreme immediately lashes out and shoots a huge amount of electricity from Mjolnir right at Union. Union has this blue staff. I remember I was just telling you about it. Takes the blue staff out and just blocks this charge that he's getting. Nothing happens to Union. It just gets absorbed into this staff, and he redirects it right back at Supreme. And Supreme gets hit and just falls to the ground. That discharge that he tried to hit Union with was enough to put Supreme on his ass. Supreme falls down to the earth. Union takes the initiative here. He realizes that, you know, he's got to try and put a stop, even though Supreme's obviously confused, he's got to try and put a stop to what's going on with Supreme. So there's a point where he hits Supreme, and Supreme goes flying into this toy store, or these shelves, I don't know. Funny, because you don't see anything about a toy store, but you see Supreme go flying backwards. And what I loved about Image, this is just something I want to bring up here real quick. Since they were an independent company, I mean, normally if you saw a Marvel book or DC book, they were very careful about them not to bring in other resemblance of properties or anything like that. Image didn't care. So on this page, you see Supreme flying backwards, and there's all these little toy figures flying up in the air. There's a Mojo figure, a freaking Thundercats figure. There's a little Troll doll, a Badrock figure or Bedrock. There's Goku. I see the Thing. Optimus Prime over there. There's Cable. I don't know. That looks like a Planet of the Apes doll right there, and I have no idea what the heck that is. That looks like a Sabretooth that is holding his knees. I have no clue. That might be a Barbie doll or a Jim doll. I could be a GEM. That's definitely Superman down there in the lower panel. I don't know who that is. I don't know if that's Ronin or Silver Samurai. But anyway, Longshot. There's Longshot. You knew, you see something like this and you're just like, oh, I can't believe Image did that back then. But anyway, Supreme goes flying. You see him get knocked backwards. Union's trying to reason with Supreme and say, look, you know, I'm not who you are, you're confused, and Supreme's not having any of it, continuing to call him Grizzlock. So Union figures there's no reasoning, there's no stopping this guy. Supreme lets loose with another blast of energy from Mjolnir. Just in time, Union gets his staff up and absorbs it, and then falls backward like he was hit. And Supreme thinks he's won the battle, and flies off. Union gets up, no scratches. And what Union's decided is that, look, all I'm doing here is antagonizing this powerful guy, and I'm not helping anything. So he decides to just kind of step back and let Supreme leave. And that's what happens. Supreme leaves. So that's the end of issue 14. Clearly, Supreme's not got his head right. We're definitely dealing with Supreme Madness here. All right, let's get into part 3 of Supreme Madness, issue number 15. And enter, well, man, if you saw this picture, folks, you're waiting. This is going to be the battle of the century if you were a fan of Supreme. The cover was Supreme and Spawn. So now we have an egomaniacal, insane, godlike super being, and we have Spawn, who is probably one of the most popular Image characters, if not the popular Image character of that time. We're going to get, you're all excited, aren't you? You want to know what the battle's going to be? Well, too bad, because we don't get a fight in here at all. I'm just going to go ahead and break the news to you. We have zero fight between Spawn and Supreme in this issue. By the way, just a brief tiny history on Spawn. Spawn was murdered, or well, Al Simmons. Al Simmons was murdered, sent to hell. I'm pretty much he becomes an agent of the devil. He becomes a hell spawn. He is sent back to Earth, and I believe he's prophesized to become one of the like generals in the devil's army. And I'm trying to do this off of memory, so I apologize if I'm getting it totally wrong, but I think that's kind of what we're dealing with there. He comes back, and he's got these superpowers. And from what I read, you know, as he uses these superpowers, it drains his life force. So, but he was very extremely popular in the 90s. So we're, you know, like I said, you see a cover like that, you're expecting a battle. Unfortunately, you get none. So Supreme shows up in this alley. Spawn frequented alleys and became a friend to the bums of the alley. Just because, you know, Spawn's not like a hero like you, like a human hero. When he came back, if you looked at his face, it reminded you quite a lot of, if you saw Deadpool without his mask, it was almost like a hamburger effect. He was burnt. There was no, like, coming back and then after he'd gotten murdered, coming back and talking to his family again. He's totally unrecognizable. So he found his comfort in the dregs of society, in the alleys with the bums. Well, Supreme is wanting to get away from everything. So he lands in this alley and scares the crap out of these bums. And it turns out these bums were just recently hanging with Al Simmons, and or Spawn. Spawn's in his costume and everything, and that's what's funny about it. Spawn's just kind of sitting back, drinking a beer, got his costume on. Bums are just treating him like he's, you know, he's one of their own. But anyway, Spawn shows up, and what we get is an origin issue again. And like I said, these issues seem very much like they're just bringing some Image characters to the forefront that are out there. These characters are from different companies, by the way. You know, we got Extreme Studios. Now we got Spawn coming into an Extreme book. We had Union coming into an Extreme book. These guys are from different companies within the Image brand. Oh, and by the way, on art, my friends, Petty is back, and we get some of the man. I'm going to post a couple pictures of Petty's artwork just because it's just so unique. But okay, short and sweet here on this particular issue. Like I said, we don't get much of a fight. Supreme's lamenting over the day, you know, and he's trying to figure things out, but he's, you know, he cannot grasp what has gone on and what's changing inside his head. Spawn shows up, and Supreme just goes on this tirade about how what happened to him in the past. He gives this backstory to Spawn and about how he was loved and adored, but after helping in the war, he decided to find his place in the stars because everyone was going to kill themselves here anyway. Spawn thinks to himself that, you know, he actually mentions to Supreme that he used to be my hero. You used to be my hero. Supreme was Al Simmons' hero. But he recognizes that the story that Supreme is giving is nothing like what actually happened. Supreme is severely confused. So what we're getting here is just pretty much it's taking a break and showing you that Supreme is steadily going insane and not, you know, not being able to have a good grasp on what's happened to him in reality. And that's a big part of the story that he gives is just kind of bullcrap. Now he blames it on Spawn blames it on Supreme being in space for 50 years, and that's what's happened to his memory. So when Supreme's done telling his story, he kind of goes on, okay. Spawn is like, well, let me tell you about my life. We get Spawn telling his side of the story about how he was shot, killed by his best friend, sent to hell, becomes a hell spawn, and has to deal with the fact that his wife now has a child and a new boyfriend, and that he has to deal with people like the Violator, and he has to deal with child killers and anti-spawns. And so he goes on a brief history about himself, and then he's like, he pretty much tells Supreme to stuff it. He says, you know what, if you're looking for sympathy here, I've got way worse of a story than you do. Supreme doesn't take that too well, and then uses the power of Mjolnir to fly on out of there, and while leaving pretty much tells Spawn, you know what, next time we meet, you might as well just be ready, because you're going to find out just how powerful I am. And that's the end of the book. So that's the end of part three. Now, next up is issue 16, part four, and we get Supreme dealing with one of my favorite books, Stormwatch. Again, like I said, these books give you a great look into some of the other heroes that are out there in the Image universe. I don't really want to call them the Justice League of America, because that's not what it is. Stormwatch was part of Wildstorm, the Wildstorm comics by Jim Lee. They were a group of superheroes brought together by the United Nations. So what was unique about this book is you had each member represented a country. You had Fuji, which was this mountain of a man who was actually pure energy and was inside this containment suit. And if the containment suit got broken, you know, we would have this you know, horrible radiation leak on our hands. But he's a, you know, huge dude. We had Hellstrike. I want to call him Hellstrike. Let me make sure I got that. Yeah, Hellstrike. I'm looking at Wikipedia here. It says an Irish police officer and an energy being is Hellstrike. Winter, who was an ex-Russian officer, and he could absorb energy. So maybe think along the lines of Bishop there, familiar with Bishop from the X-Men universe. Fuji, who was a Japanese man, energy being trapped in a large, super strong containment suit. And Diva is an Italian lady who had sonic powers. And then we have the leader of the group, who was Battalion. Battalion was a telekinetic. He could also kind of read minds. So there's your members of Stormwatch. What they've been doing is they've been kind of keeping tabs on this whole Supreme situation. If you ever read the Stormwatch book, their headquarters, I think, was called Skywatch. I want to call it Skywatch. Man, now I can't remember exactly, but they were headquartered up in space, you know, and they would kind of keep an eye on the goings-on in the world. Well, Union apparently had alerted them and said, look, Supreme has got some issues. They have decided that they're going to try and comb the earth and find Supreme and keep an eye on them and try and figure out what they need to do with them. So they hop in this vessel and they start heading down to the earth because the Skywatch is like this huge base, I think up in, you know, pretty much up in space. And but they hop in the ship, head down to the earth. What we, you know, their goal is to try and find Supreme. However, Supreme turns the tables and finds them instead. Apparently he knows that Stormwatch has been after them, or at least looking for them. You get a very Hulk kind of vibe from Supreme as he's going through these problems. He just wants to be left alone. He doesn't want anybody to bother him. He wants to try and sort things out. And he's getting pissed because everybody is just constantly on top of him trying to fix his, you know, trying to get in there and mess with his head. And of course, his head ain't right in the first place right now. So he proceeds to attack the ship that Stormwatch is in right now. While the team decide to go out and try and face him, D.Va nails Supreme and sends him falling to the earth. Stormwatch follows after him, and they go into the city. They're trying to figure out how to deal with Supreme. Supreme is, you know, still using his hammer, the hammer of Supreme, and using the electrical discharges and doing his best in the power that Mjolnir's giving him. He's doing his best to try and take out Stormwatch. Now, Winter, the guy that could, you know, the Russian guy that could absorb powers and redirect them, he comes up with this great idea, and he's like, look, if we can get him to hit me with an electrical discharge, I'll turn around and shoot it right back at him, a la what Union did. Before he could finish the sentence, which he says it out loud, Supreme's right behind him. Instead of hitting with any type of energy blast, just punches him in the face and knocks him out. So Winter's down. D.Va hits him again with some type of her voice, her sonic voice power, and that stuns Supreme. He for some reason has some type of, you know, he hasn't been able to handle her powers at all very well. But she hits him and he falls backwards. Battalion, as he's stunned, Battalion starts to get in his head, and what Battalion is able to do is find out that there's hope for Supreme to turn things around. You know, there's still part of Supreme that's in there, even though he's suffering from this madness. Fuji, the big dude, the big Japanese guy, decides to go after Supreme. Supreme gets his bearings again, takes this hammer, and just with one swing, mind you, one swing of Mjolnir, hits a building, and the building proceeds to fall on Fuji. Fuji's out of the picture now. Supreme then shoots up to the sky, and the Stormwatch is like, what the hell's going on? The guy's down here on the ground, he's up here, he's flying all over the place. So they're trying to figure out what Supreme's doing. Supreme's heading to the ship that they flew in, and he's going to cripple their vessel so they won't have any way of following him. So he flies onto the vessel, and about that time, this message comes in from Weatherman 1, which is basically the director or whatever from that handles Stormwatch. And he's telling Battalion, he's like, get the team out of there. We need to get out of there. And Battalion's like, what? What's going on? Well, turns out the officials in the area are not too happy about the fact that you guys are knocking down buildings trying to contain Supreme. So they now have the orders to leave Supreme alone. Problem is, the Supreme is on their ship. Okay, we'll leave, no problem, but we've got to get Supreme off the freaking ship. So Hellstrike gets an idea. Hellstrike grabs a hold of Supreme's hammer, and Supreme is holding onto this hammer for dear life. He's not going to let anybody get a hold of it. Grabs a hold of Supreme's hammer and flies out the hatch of the ship with Supreme in tow, and then hits him with some type of energy blast and sends Supreme back down to the ground. Flies into the ship and off takes Stormwatch. Stormwatch is now out of the picture. At the end of the issue, Supreme falls down into this like park, and he lands on top of this carousel. Destroys the carousel, of course. As he's laying dazed, you know, with his hands on his head, trying to figure out what the heck just happened, trying to get his bearings, behind him stands this hulking figure. And that figure is a character by the name of Pitt. Now, Pitt is spelled with two T's, my friends, which makes Pitt that much more of a badass. So, next issue is Pitt versus Supreme. There was a few issues a while back of Spider-Man. This was, man, 2010, 2009, where Spider-Man went through something called the Gauntlet. He went through, just seemed like every villain that he had, he would, you know, this issue he's fighting this guy. Okay, just when he's getting over fighting this guy, now he's got to fight this other villain. Now he's got to fight the Rhino. Very, very similar vibe here where Supreme just keeps getting into fight after fight after fight. Then again, we take a break with Spawn. He might as well just sat down and had a beer with Spawn. He gets into a fight with Union, gets into a fight with Stormwatch. Now we're getting into a fight with Pitt. He's like from an alien race in the Image universe. If you ever get a chance to look up Pitt, he's a huge, huge figure. They actually did a Pitt-Hulk crossover, I think, in the late 90s, and that was actually a pretty decent book. Dale Keown, my friends, I can remember the issue that had of the Hulk, okay? Hulk was going through a phase where he was gray, and this was had to have been the late 80s, early 90s. Dale Keown took over pencils, or at least did the cover for this one, of The Incredible Hulk. And I'll never forget this cover. And I think it was an homage to an earlier cover, but it had the Gray Hulk, who had been around for quite a while. Nobody knew when the Green Hulk was or if ever was going to return. But we had the Gray Hulk on one side, Gray Hulk's face on one side, Bruce Banner's face on the other side. And ripping through the two faces was the Green Hulk. And it was the return of the Green Hulk. That cover was done by Dale Keown, and one of the first times that I've ever looked at art and said, wow, that guy can freaking draw. Well, with Pitt, nothing changed. The man could draw. And the best way for me to describe Pitt is like this, a Hulk figure. I mean, humongous dude. Dale Keown created Pitt. Pitt is a Creed. That's the name of the alien breed. Creed human hybrid. If you look at him, he looks very alien. Gray skin. Very, very long claws on his fingers. Chains. That's one of the things about Pitt when you look at him. He's got chains going around his wrists, his waist, his legs, all the way up and down through his chest. Just a humongous dude. So he lands just laying right in front of Pitt. Now, Pitt has been in a battle with these bounty hunters that are coming to try and get Pitt from space that have been sent by a guy by the name of Zoivod. He thinks that Supreme is one of these bounty hunters. By the way, just a real quick shout out to the art on this. This is probably some of the best art in the series. Guy by the name of Cedric Nocon, N-O-C-O-N, Nocon. I wish I could pronounce Nocon. It's not Nocon. It's got to be Nocon or Nosen. I have no idea. But N-O-C-O-N, some of the best art of this series, by the way. One of the things you could talk with Supreme, the art was just artist, different artist. Story might stay the same, but the art was just all over the place with different guys. But Cedric's is definitely one of the best in here. Chappie Aup, which I think is the guy's name that did the cover. Oh, man, some beautiful, beautiful art. But anyway, in this particular issue, Pitt believes Supreme to be an agent of his enemy, Zoivod. Now, Pitt is freaking huge compared to Supreme. Supreme's a big guy, but Pitt dwarfs Supreme. Now, Supreme's dazed, so Pitt's just kind of standing over him, just hits him, and sends Supreme flying. Supreme goes flying through the air, but he comes back with a vengeance. And of course, we get our big fight on our hands. Supreme's getting his shots in with and without the hammer. Another one punch. You know, as Pitt's trying to shake these blows off, he hits Supreme and with one punch sends Supreme flying off his feet again. Supreme goes flying through like four trees, and he's obviously laying there dazed. Now Pitt's about to end it. He's got Supreme where he wants him, and he's about to end it when the police show up. And this allows Supreme to get his bearings and go back on the attack again. And Supreme then grabs Pitt's arm and kind of like locks it between him and the hammer and flies up into the air with Pitt in tow. He charges his hammer and just sends Pitt flying back down to the ground and hits him with some type of a blast. Now, at this time, Pitt realizes that the power that Supreme is getting is mostly from the hammer, and he decides one of the ways to end this is to separate the hammer from Supreme. And as Pitt's laying there on the ground, Supreme is about to try and finish him with one last blast. Pitt jumps up and with one hand puts his hand around the throat of Supreme and with the other rests the hammer of Supreme from our anti-hero. And the last page is Supreme held in the air by one hand and the hammer stretched out in Pitt's other hand. We now have a very, very somewhat powerless Supreme on our hands here. And that's the end of the issue of part 5. Okay, what issue is this? This is going to be issue 18, part 6. Issue 18, part 6, the finale of Supreme Madness. Obviously, we start out Supreme's panic. You see a look on his face that he's freaking out, you know. The one thing that he has the most grasp on. Even though his mind is failing him, he knows he needs that. He needs Mjolnir in order to stay alive, and that is his basic power. Just like when he battled with Union, that power powers him. It needs him, and he needs it. It protects him. So he's now separated from it. Again, Pitt has him at such a disadvantage. He's about to try, and he's going to end it with Supreme. But before he can do that, no interruptions this time. Pitt starts to think back. He starts to realize that no, this isn't an agent, or this isn't a bounty hunter sent by one of his mortal enemies. This is actually somebody that had actually saved his race in the past. On Pitt's home planet, there was this asteroid that was coming directly towards the planet and would have obliterated all life had it hit. However, Supreme at that time actually destroyed the asteroid and saved everybody on the planet. And Supreme goes down and they treat him, you know, they treat him like a god, and they have a feast in his honor. So Pitt starts to realize, well, he can't kill the savior of his race. He owes his life to Supreme. So Pitt drops the hammer and drops Supreme at the same time. In the immortal words of Jack Slater, big mistake. They again start to tussle. You know, Supreme gets up and he's like, okay, now you've done it. You have lost your only advantage. I'm taking you out. So Supreme is going to take Pitt out. They start to fight again, and this time they're fighting in this park. They end up going into this lake. Pitt's, you know, realizing that he's dealing with this crazed maniac on his hand because they're underwater. Supreme starts to charge the freaking hammer. Pitt's like, I'm getting the hell out of here. You know, this guy is absolutely crazy. Has he no idea what he's about to do? Because if we know one thing, folks, water and electricity does not mix. Pitt jumps out of the lake just before this bolt of electricity comes down and practically boils the water off of the lake. Now, there are people in boats here that Pitt is, after this charge comes down and is done and over with, these people are stranded and they need, you know, Pitt goes out and tries to help them. Well, a few seconds later, out of the water comes Supreme again, and he's just as pissed off as ever. And he, you know, he looks, let me get in here, I'll just read you what he says. He, because he comes out of it with a vengeance. And he looks at Pitt, and he says, where are you hiding, monster? You are frightened like some, and then he starts to lose it. And as he comes out of the water, goes on to land, he's right there in front of Pitt and just falls at Pitt's feet and passes out. So Supreme has done himself in. He was his own undoing by boiling the lake while he was in it like an idiot. Now, when Supreme awakes, okay, now there is a bit of a side story that I didn't even touch on throughout these books. Throughout this period of time, there were like maybe two or three pages devoted to another escaped convict that was going to go after. Actually, it looked like a lot of what he was going to do was trying to live off of Zachary Grislock's legacy. A guy by the name of Simon Simpkins, or as he is, the most imposing name you've ever heard, Simple. Simon. Well, anyway, they devoted some, you know, two or three pages to each of these issues for Simple Simon, who is trying basically to backtrack Zachariah Grislock and find Zachariah Grislock's lab. My guess is that he's also got it out for Supreme, because when Supreme awakes in the park, Simple Simon has now discovered that Zachariah Grislock's dead. He has found Zachariah Grislock's lab and has decided to create himself, feeling that he is superior to Zachariah Grislock. He has created himself a suit of armor of some sort and a flying, man, I don't even know if I want to call this a glider. I better look at this, because this really now start to have a freaking Green Goblin feel to it. Let me look at this and see if it's a glider. That's definitely a glider, but this is not, he's not green. He's dressed in red and gold, and he's got this flying suit on. He immediately attacks Supreme while Supreme is getting up from just being unconscious. By the way, I forgot to mention this. While he was unconscious, his mind finally resets itself. He's now back to the egomaniacal, but not so insane, Supreme that we all know and love. So Simple Simon does his thing, and he proceeds to attack Supreme. Now, we've had, seriously, probably five or six issue buildup on this. Simple Simon attacks Supreme. Supreme's trying to hold him off, and what we find out is Simple Simon's actual purpose of attacking Supreme at that point in time is only just to piss him off. He actually tells him, he says, look, the only reason I'm doing this is to get under your skin, because later on down the line, I'm taking you out. So, at the end of this issue here, we're kind of getting, you know, we're setting up for one of, you get this feeling that we're setting up for another major villain for Supreme. So Supreme's trying to battle him a little bit, you know, hit him with the hammer, shoot him with some electrical blasts, and it's not really phasing Simple Simon very much at all. Simple Simon decides that he is going to leave. You know, he's done. He'll come back and face Supreme another day because he's done his job getting under Supreme's skin. He's about to take off when he turns and he runs right square into freaking Pit. And Pit just stands there and this thing flies right into him. This glider and Simple Simon fly right into Pit and the whole thing just freaking explodes. And Simple Simon's just laying there on the ground, you know, begging for mercy. And Supreme goes over and grabs him by the capes, grabs Simple Simon by the cape. He looks at Pit and he says, you're the one that was in my dream. Supreme has no idea that what's happened the past 4 or 5 days is actually something that occurred. So he thinks that he thinks that Pit was something out of his dream. And Pit confides him and says, yeah, my name's Pit. You're the guy that saved my people. And he proceeds to tell him the story. He says, you destroyed an asteroid that was going to kill off my race, potentially kill off the whole planet. And you see Supreme kind of think off to the side. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I destroyed that asteroid for sport. Doesn't say that out loud, but, you know, that's what he's thinking. And so he's got Simple Simon in one hand. He's sitting there talking to Pit in the other. Pit says, well, you know, I saw you was fighting with this guy. I had to come back and, you know, I felt you needed my aid. Well, Supreme's like, I did not need your help. And proceeds to take off. Because Pit says, no, Supreme, if you ever need my aid again, and then proceeds, says, I won't. Simon, we've got a long way home, so sit tight and shut up. Supreme's got him by the cape, and he flies off with Mjolnir in hand. And in his mind, Supreme, he's thinking, Pit was out of line. I didn't want or need his help. Simon was as good as caught even before he showed up. If Pit knows what's good for him, he'll manage to stay clear of me in the future. And that, my friends, is the end of Supreme Madness. One of the things that I really started to notice here with these image books, it was the inks. That was another thing too. I mean, we give the artist so much accolades. It's kind of rare that we give the inkers some accolades. You know, there's some inkers that if I look at these books, I would immediately go, okay, I could tell who that's inked by. And Norm Ratman was one of the names that I can clearly remember doing some of these books. But okay, so, you know, in closing with Supreme Madness, Supreme's one of my favorite characters. One of the big things you take out of this series is Supreme has lost his powers. Okay, he's relying on Mjolnir, and not only that, he's obviously gone insane. Imagine if Superman lost his powers back in the 90s or something like that, and he was without his powers. Maybe that is something that's common, now that I think of it. But Supreme loses his powers, and he was dependent upon his powers, and so much that it fueled his ego. It fueled what he thought of himself, and he clearly relied upon his powers to help him with his understanding of where he was in the Image universe. But a character that loses his powers after 12 issues, it was kind of crazy for me to actually see that happen. And then, of course, in Supreme Madness, the guy goes insane and goes up against some of the powerhouses of the Image universe. It was a crossover that you wanted to get your hands on just to see how he would handle himself. You know, they didn't go to too many extremes. It's not like they killed off a whole lot of any one of the corresponding characters. You know, it wasn't that big of a revelatory crossover, but again, it was a fun little story to bring in other characters from throughout the Image universe and see how they would match up against Supreme. I don't really know what went into the fact that they made Supreme lose his powers, because what we're going to cover here one of these days, I don't know if it'll be this year or anytime, it may be, but there is a crossover that occurs within the Image universe that is called the Extreme Sacrifice. Within 6 or 7 more issues, Supreme's going to die. And we're not talking a Superman death. This was definitely mid-90s, ultra-violent. Supreme meets his end. And I'll cover it because it was completely shocking to me. I remember when I first picked up the issue, I didn't think that was ever going to happen to Supreme. The series goes on for 50-some issues, so obviously Supreme comes back. Again, you can make all the comparisons you want to Superman. I understand that. Because Superman died, he came back. Supreme died, he came back. But doesn't shake that this was one of my favorite characters back in the day. I think that's it. I think we have, I've talked all I can about Supreme Madness.
Thank you very much for joining us. Do not forget to subscribe to our new home by punching in W2M Network on just about any podcast platform to get all of our content into your audio feed. Also, give a like to the Rattlitch in Broadcasting Network and W2MNet.com Facebook page in order to stay on top of everything that we have to offer. If you'd like to follow the Source Material Podcast on social media, just follow at Source Matcast on Twitter, and we are on Facebook at Source Material Comics Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please feel free to share. We look forward to entertaining you again soon.